Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Mark Reardon Show.
He's a bully with $17 million in a security detail.
Quit the tough guy act. You know where to find me. Any place, cowboy.
It's common sense. You know, some things are law, and I'm all in favor of it. And some things are common sense.
And I heard a boom in my whole house show.
This is the Reardon Roundtable.
Every day it's something new here in this studio, so that was kind of fun. We did a little echo. I was just experimenting with that just to see if we would do the entire Reardon Roundtable in an echo chamber this afternoon.
Well, it was a success.
It was a success.
Yes, but unfortunately, we've moved on.
There was a button that was put. I blame Brad. That's who I'm blaming right now because he was on this board before me, and I apologize for that because we had no idea what was going on, but something was pressed that should not have been pressed. Ladies and gentlemen, how are you as we take you into the weekend? Friday is here. Sue, I would argue that the week went by relatively quickly.
I know you would.
You don't say. It's been slow for you?
Yes, and I can't. I don't know. I think I've psyched myself out.
No, everybody's got different perspectives. You know? There's no doubt about that. We'll ask our panel here this afternoon as Jane is making her way into the studio. She caught a little traffic. Donna Behringer is here, state representative, and also a new candidate for another office here in St. Louis, the St. Louis City Comptroller. Or do you say comptroller? How are you, Donna?
Comptroller?
Comptroller.
All right.
I'm great.
Well, say it that way.
I was always confused by that because, like, in Illinois, they had a comptroller. They used to call it comptroller. But then I always thought that the name was controller because you're controlling the finances, right? And we'll get into that
either.
Just a little bit. Yeah. Sean Flowers here. He's the mayor of Eureka. I know what the word mayor means. How are you, Sean?
Doing very well.
Thanks for coming in. Well, let me... I want to talk to Jane about some of this stuff with the school shooting and the hush bunny, but let me start just with the abortion issue because there's actually some breaking news on that here this afternoon, and you guys can react to this in real time. I just found this before the show and wasn't really clear what was going on, and my guess is, you know, there's going to be a lot of legal wrangling that goes on before the election, although this is important because it has to happen before next Tuesday. So here's the story. Mary Elizabeth Coleman, who I think was on the panel last week, if I'm not mistaken. I'm losing track of it. No, she wasn't.
No.
She was supposed to be here, but she was busy.
Yeah.
But she is a Republican state senator who's been very active on the pro-life side. And she and another group, I guess, have gone in and they have asked a Cole County judge to block the abortion issue. Christopher Limbaugh is the judge. He said that briefs were due just a few minutes ago at 3:00. He would rule as soon as possible. So they have to finalize the ballots by Tuesday. And I guess the claim here is that the language violates a constitutional requirement that measures adhere to one subject. And they said that in violation of state law, it did not include information in the text of the petition, which laws would be repealed if voters approved Amendment 3. So there's a woman named Mary Catherine Martin, who's an attorney with the Thomas More Society, who represents the plaintiffs and says it should not be on the ballot. And Mary Elizabeth's name is mentioned here as well. So they heard some arguments, I guess, and some briefs. And I guess the judge is going to have to consider this. My sense would be this is not going to be kicked off the ballot, but I don't know the particulars of the constitutional issue here. Donna, do you know anything more about this or what's your reaction to that?
Well, I apologize because I actually don't. But what I will tell you is that we do use what's called ballot candy. And that's basically the first sentence of the amendment would be something you would automatically reply to, no, yes, but then it goes on and on and on and on. It's actually saying something else. So that would not be original because we do ballot candy. So that's why I was confused about saying it would violate what we say in the House called the Hammerschmidt rule, which is it has to be one topic only.
Well, that seemingly is the claim. But in this, and this is, again, one of those constitutional amendment issues that is very lengthy, right? It's very wordy. Mm-hmm. I haven't read the entire thing. But Sean, I don't know if this is something that might pass, you know, constitutional muster. In other words, a judge says, OK, it's off the ballot. To me, it seems like a last ditch effort to keep this thing from voters. And I don't know if it's going to work.
Yeah, it seems like the language, especially the ballot language on this one's gone back and forth, because wasn't there a cover of the Post-Dispatch this morning, too, that they were another one, they were something with, you know, Ashcroft. off, taking it off. So, I mean, I know that language. I mean, the bill's controversial, and
right.
that language is obviously causing a lot of controversy back and forth. But yeah, it seems it always seems to me it's hard to get a judge to take a ballot that's been put on there off with all the petitions.
Right.
The bar's pretty high.
The quote from the ACLU in the Post coverage is that politicians and special interest groups are making a last-ditch effort to prevent Missourians from exercising their constitutional right to direct democracy. That's Tori Schaefer, who's with the ACLU. Jane has made her way in. Do you know anything about this, the lawsuit? And I guess Mary Elizabeth was involved in this. They're trying to keep the abortion issue off the ballot. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to work, though, Jane, is it?
No. In fact, the judge fixed the ballot language because it was a little over the top, and that's where you're getting all the arguments about, oh, they can have an abortion until the baby's born, because that was the sort of the title that was actually misleading, and the court and a Republican judge found it to be misleading. So, no, I don't think it's going to work, but everybody's going to try to stop it. I mean, that's just the way the process is.
Well, the arguments are the same either way. Like, if you don't, you could take the exact same party, flip it, and if they didn't like the amendment, you would use the same arguments, the same. I mean, that it's all process-based arguments, so it's
absolutely
the same,
you know, and you know, and you do want
any of them,
and you do want people fighting when you're mm-hmm. changing the Constitution. I mean, you know, I've always been this, we're playing too much with the Constitution.
Yeah, it's not a good process.
It's not a great process. So even though this is something I support people's ability to challenge.
All right, let me kind of shift gears here and talk about what happened in Georgia. And now we have a lot more information. I find it interesting, I said this yesterday, that we have more information on this kid and the family involved in this shooting than we have ever had in the last 7 or 8 weeks on what happened in Pennsylvania with the assassination attempt. So that in and of itself is a little confusing to me. But last night, and this happened after essentially I was off the air, the father of the teenager who killed 4 people has been arrested, as I think most people know. Colin Gray is his name. He's been charged with 4 counts of manslaughter, 2 counts of second-degree murder, 8 counts of cruelty to children. And it's interesting because, look, they went in the spring of last year. They had conversations with this kid and his family after there were tips that were kind of mm-hmm. sent from the FBI, and they were vetting these. So there mm-hmm. were investigations that were committed, and the father said, no, I'm going to keep the firearms in check and all this stuff. The kid denies all this stuff. The following Christmas, last Christmas, he buys the kid an AR. He gives it to him after law enforcement visits the home, and after he threatens to shoot up a school. He says to the investigators that he never had unsupervised access, so they swooped in very quickly here. We saw what happened in Michigan, but these prosecutors wasted no time in charging this guy. Thank God, because
absolutely.
He's completely culpable. I hope he spends the rest of his years behind bars.
I mean, this is, I don't even know how, what place, I mean, I'm a parent. I can't imagine if my, you know, child has threatened to shoot up a school, that I think it's a great idea to buy him an AR. It's unfathomable to me. And I'm glad that parents are starting to be forced to be accountable for the behavior of their kids.
Yes.
Because, government can do what government can do, but families have to do what they have to do. And this was a complete breach. Here's the thing. You know, law enforcement is at it's very difficult. They can't just take people to jail because people make threats. So they did as much as
right.
they possibly could. There's nothing more the government could have done here without, you know, just really basically putting someone in jail because they may have a mental illness, which, you know, we're not going to go down that path.
I think that's for the most part true, but there was a little confusion when I was reading the accounts of what happened last spring, because the FBI certainly was involved. They got involved with the local law enforcement mm-hmm. and they seemingly worked together. But then at one point, it seems like the feds came back and said that this was not deemed a reliable threat, which that part was confusing to me. But Jane, generally, I think you're right.
The mental illness of someone.
Right, but if this was a year ago, that means he was only 13 years
yes,
old.
Yes, he was only 13, exactly.
Correct. And so maybe that's why they said, oh, it's only a 13-year-old.
I mean,
they wouldn't have access to an AR-15 and go out and shoot up a bunch of people.
Right.
So that's, well, that's they the
do.
Age
do you know about the Russian, do you guys know about the Russian handle that he had on the social media account? So the account that he had, and again, there was some difficulty connecting the kid to the account, and he says, and his dad's like, well, he doesn't know any Russian, right? Well, if you translated Russian, and I don't know if the kid did or not, but listen to what happened here. In if you translate his handle, it was Lanza, L-A-N-Z-A.
As in Adam Lanza?
Adam Lanza.
Oh, my Lord.
So that's another mass shooter.
Red flag.
Yeah. Right. So this kid, that's what I said yesterday, that this kid had red flag as his middle name.
But
he really did.
You know, but here's the thing. I mean, I don't know that law enforcement can go in and take this kid.
I understand that.
And so then, you know, so at some point, I mean, and I know that people are calling for government regulation. I get it. But the bottom line in this situation, the parents should have stepped in and done something.
Well, there's more than just the father. So let me get to the mother here, and then there's the wacky aunt, and I'll cover that too. So Marcy Gray is the mother. She's 43 years old. She has a lengthy rap sheet, including charges of drug and domestic violence arrest. Neighbors say that this is horrible. I mean, this kid was effed up, I think, is what we're going to find out. She locked the children outside of the house at night, leaving them there to scream for hours. Child Protective Services had visited the home many times since the family moved there, and they've only been there for 2 years. And then the aunt. Now, this is someone claiming to be this kid's aunt on Facebook, warning that there's going to be trouble if anyone speaks ill of her nephew. So this part of the story says that Annie Polhamis Brown, who identified herself as Gray's aunt, leapt to the teen's defense in a series of since-removed Facebook posts soon after authorities identified him as the gunman. The woman vowed to stick by the kid, saying she will not, in caps, leave her nephew standing alone. So I don't know exactly what that's about, but this is a disaster. You have two teachers and two kids that were killed at this school. Mm-hmm. They had just started. A couple of the kids had just started there. Mm-hmm. It is a horrifying week, and I can't imagine having, you know, the information that they have now and knowing what they know. You have to be even more infuriated.
Yes. Well, I mean, so if Child Protective Services was there, you wonder, you know, what should they have done? I mean, this sounds like a horrible situation.
Mm-hmm. But they probably threatened them. I would think that they probably actually threatened the people that showed up at their house.
I can't say.
You mean the family did?
They are acting this way.
But I do think, I mean, I'm generally pro Second Amendment. I don't think you should be taken, you should not be, you know, blanket taking guns away from law-abiding citizens. But I do think there's a responsibility with that. And especially in cases like this, I think it actually sends a very good message that parents, I mean, especially unless you hand a kid a gun, and it's illegal for that kid to have that rifle at 13. You're not even supposed to have that kind of stuff. There's so many laws broken on it. There has to be punishment for people that know better, mm-hmm. and there is existing law. For those that say the gun laws don't do it, there's an existing law. This guy's going to jail, and he's going to be that's another parent doing it. So if you're going to buy a gun and you're going to have it, you better know what you're doing.
You, the statutes also, though, have to match up, don't they, Jane, in mm-hmm. order to prosecute people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know what the language would be in Missouri, you know, to have the ability to do this if a parent's involved. Do we have that within our law?
There are criminal laws like child endangerment. Yeah. But the penalties for that are not probably as stiff as what people would want to be if you handed your kid a gun.
Well, the Michigan
and he killed
ones, for, I mean, they were, they're going to jail for a while, and I don't know that those were special.
I mean,
laws
we may need to
child,
look at Missouri
you know,
laws.
I mean, you know,
we
I,
may yeah. need to look at them.
Well, and unfortunately, you're right, though. They went to, I think they're like 15 to 18 years or something like that. It was significant,
right,
which it should be.
But we have the most lax laws of any state in the United States when it comes to guns.
Well, unfortunately, I'm going to bring up another case here from St. Louis, as you know, with this 4-year-old that was killed. And that's another issue that involves the parents. So hang in there. It's a Reardon Roundtable for a Friday afternoon. Jane Duker, State Rep Donna Berenger, the mayor of Eureka, Missouri. Sean Flower is here. ELO in town tonight. Enterprise Center.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
The battle is on. This is the Reardon Roundtable.
Friday afternoon, mixing it up here in the studio with Jane Duker, also State Rep Donna Berenger, and Sean Flower, the mayor of Eureka, is here. Sean, kind of start with you on this one. We had a couple of things happen in the last couple of days relating to crimes by either presidential candidates or relatives of current presidents. I've got to put it that way. But let's start with Trump here, because Judge Juan Merchan today moved the sentencing date in the hush money trial until after November. That was supposed to come up here on September 18th. It's now November 26th. He said that this held a unique place in the nation's history and that the delay was necessary to ensure the integrity of the case. The imposition of sentence will be adjourned to avoid any appearance, however unwarranted, that the proceeding has been affected by or seeks to affect the approaching presidential election. election in which the defendant is a candidate. So I think that's probably a wise decision on the part of Judge
Michonne. And the important thing with a trial and those type of charges is to make sure you have the criminal conviction. But that's totally fine, and that does nothing to kind of taint the election spirit. But as long as you don't do the sentencing until after the election, that does clear it up, make it quite
quick. Jane, Donna, first one. You guys are going to win, or I'm going to give you a prize. What was he convicted of? The hell was he convicted of?
False documents.
What'd he do?
False documents.
Yeah, thank you.
It was a conspiracy with a state charge, fire charge.
I'm telling you, play this
false
game.
False documents in applying for loans. He falsified documents to banks.
Play this game with your lefty friends at home and family members.
I think I'm right.
They won't know.
I think I'm right.
No, it's the same look you get when it's the same as when they do what's Kamala's biggest accomplishment. You get the same kind of scared look on their faces. So it's the same thing.
What about Hunter Biden? Let's shift to that. How are we going to spin that one?
You can't.
It's amazing that now. This charge was almost dropped and settled. I mean, again, Biden has never. I mean, it's all about board. Department of Justice has not political. We don't do anything political. That's almost gone. That judge stops that right at the last minute, and now all of a sudden, not only is it not settled, we're getting some of the most serious charges out of it. And he's now not doing the game and not showing up at Congress. He's actually going to plead guilty the whole thing. And I'm certain he's not going to be pardoned.
No, he's doing a NOLO.
Yeah, it's just amazing
that's the thing. This is what happened yesterday. It got very confusing. They were going to do this Alford plea,
which is nonsense,
and they didn't do it because this is the other thing, Sean. David Weiss is the same guy that cut him the sweetheart deal, and then he has to go back and say, okay, I screwed this up. I have to prosecute this kid. Well, he's not even a kid. So then they go in yesterday. They're surprised by this because they want to do the Alford plea. They go back into court. The judge, I think, lectures him pretty good. They plead guilty to everything. So he did not do an Alford plea.
Good.
He did plead guilty to the charges. So now the question is, I think I heard the snark there. There is no doubt that he's going to be pardoned, Jane. Why wouldn't Biden pardon him?
No, he's not going to be pardoned.
Why not, Donna?
I would be surprised by that.
I would be very surprised.
Why? What would surprise
him? He might forget.
He's had a stellar career. He's not going to end it on pardoning his son.
There's no political risk whatsoever.
Dropping out of the presidential election three months before the end, the stellar career is going to end, and he's going to be too proud to pardon his son on the way out the door. I don't think he will.
Well, we'll see. I mean, obviously, we're going to know what happens with that. And either Sean and I will be right, or you guys will be right. There's not going to be a whole lot of in between there, I don't think.
But yes or no.
It was an interesting day. So let's talk about Kamala. And the debate is coming up on Tuesday night. Look, this has been a weird 7 or 8 weeks since Biden got out, the assassination attempt. You had no comments, no interviews from Tim Walz and Kamala Harris. Then she does, well, I guess they did a sit-down interview. And there hasn't been a lot of activity for her this week, because I think she's doing debate prep is what we're told, locked down into a room. So I don't want to underestimate the vice president, because I think that what I see right now optically, I'm not talking about issues, but let me explain what I see optically. I see a candidate that has energy in Kamala Harris, that smiles a lot, that has no policy positions whatsoever, but that might not matter. And then I see Trump, who looks a lot older than he did against Biden. He doesn't seem to have the energy. He's not really focusing on some of the issues in front of them. Well, right, well, that's always happened. So what are the anticipations? Donna, I'll start with you on the debate on Tuesday night.
Well, first of all, I think he's going to have a huge audience. And we have a lot of people.
So.
Yeah, we have a lot of people that are going to be watching. And I think as long as Kamala does, I mean, she was an attorney, so she can do speaking. But if Trump tries to attack her, then he's going to definitely push everybody towards Kamala, so it won't matter. He cannot treat Kamala like he did Hillary Clinton. He can't.
Yeah, no, hopefully they'll have him on lockdown and, like, don't attack women and don't call her, you know, a hoe, and don't, you know, say, you know, what she did to get her job and all the nonsense that he says on Twitter and whatever else. And, you know, if he can control himself.
Well, I think, you know, the thing is if you go back to that first debate, I think there were a couple of things that stood out. One was Biden's performance from the very get-go was just shocking, and it was glaringly, you know, awkward and really sad in the end. But Trump sort of was disciplined in that debate, and he's been rather disciplined to a certain extent. I think he got off the rails a little bit in August. So I don't know. You know, both of them have risks when it comes to behavior, because certainly he can say something that's not going to look good to especially middle of the road, you know, independent voters. But there's also the possibility that she's asked a question and has no freaking clue how to answer it because we saw it last week.
Well, there's a problem with not doing interviews, not telling people what your positions are, not defending it in tough places, because Trump's going everywhere. I mean, he's talking to anybody that'll do it, and you get sharper and you get better at handling stuff on your feet. I think he's a far better candidate coming to this one, is how he presents himself. But I think she's taking a risk by not thinking on her feet, not talking to anybody, avoiding everything. And she's not a strong speaker anyway. She struggles on her feet. I think she's taking a real risk by
he had a bad day today. I mean, when he went on the diatribe about the accusations of sexual misconduct.
You don't ever bring up those any policy positions. Like, you know, the fact is that when Trump changes policy, he comes out and says it. But you can't be for fracking and then have your anonymous aide say you're not for fracking. You got an unrealized tax that everybody, even your own staff, even your own advisors, tell you will tank the market, is terrible. You copy his tax or tips, but nothing ever comes out of her. She can't explain her positions. And at some point, I think the general public and the independents, the personality, everybody knows what Trump is. Everybody, you know, you can be offended or not, but even his last line is, you don't have to like me, but you sure do like my policies better. And frankly, I think that's going to be a pretty strong argument after a while.
Well, he should be doing better. He should be doing better than he is. Well, and that's the problem.
In what way, Jane? In what way? He's still up over
50%. No, wait, in what way? I'm just curious.
It depends on what poll you look at, Sean. Right, I mean, you know, she's winning some polls too. And I mean, look, for anybody to say that this is somehow locked and loaded for him is completely wrong.
I don't think it's locked and loaded for him at all. But what do you want him to look? I'm going to give you the snapshot from September 6th, from 2016 and 2020. And I don't think you can argue at all that Trump's in a bad position, especially compared to those elections and what happened. So in 2016, the national poll had Hillary Clinton up 3.3%. The average. This is the real clear average, right? The 2020 race, Biden was up significantly, 6.9%. Harris has a 1.8% average lead right now. But in the swing states that matter, which is what really should be looking at, Wisconsin, I'm just going to tell you right now, I think Harris is going to win Wisconsin. I know that state, and it's pretty blue, and I think in the end, Harris will win. I think they're going to get African-American support that was not there for Hillary Clinton in 2016, and that's correct. Why she did not win Wisconsin. Pennsylvania, Clinton was up 6.5 in 2016. Biden was up 3.2. That's a tie right now. In Ohio...
And I don't believe that's going to stay a tie with both Fetterman and Shapiro.
No, I don't either. I think what's going to happen is Trump's going to win Pennsylvania. In Ohio, that's locked down red. Michigan, I would predict Harris is going to win, but she has a very narrow lead right now. Arizona, Trump's up in Nevada. I think Nevada goes to Trump, but that's really close right now. Nevada's an interesting state. North Carolina has a slight lead for Trump. Georgia has Harris up by 0.1. Trump was up 1.6 in 2016 and then 1.3 in 2020. So look, there's no lockdown for anyone right now. The polls show that this thing is very close and it's within the margins, especially when it comes to the national polling. But keep in mind, Hillary Clinton won by, what was it, 2 or 3% with the popular vote. Same thing if you look at Biden versus Trump. I mean, he won the electoral vote too, but the significant difference there was in the popular vote. So you could have easily a situation where Harris wins the popular vote by maybe even 2 or 3 million people, but still loses the electoral college. Now, let me shift to the Senate a little bit, because I think this is getting interesting as well. John Tester is in trouble in Montana, so that could be our pickup there. Ohio is another state that, you know, might go for Republicans. I think there's a chance there. We know that Josh Hawley is going to likely win here in Missouri. So I'm starting to look at the makeup of Congress, because the House is going to be very, very narrow. It looks like Republicans might have control of the Senate. So there is a dynamic, and I've been talking about this, where Harris wins, but she's got no support from either
House. The American people are pretty good about sort of splitting it up.
In a weird way.
That would not surprise me at all. And I think, because they don't want anyone, I think generally people don't want anyone to have too much power.
That's right.
And so, and here's the thing, if by some, you know, whatever, and she does get control of Congress, the midterms will be such a shellacking that it's almost not worth it. I mean, so, you know, I think they'll split it up. I think if the Senate and the House is close, the House is going to be close no matter who is technically in charge. So that's sort of a wash. But the Senate, going to be awfully close as well.
So let's say the
American people will split it up.
But let's say they don't, because if Trump wins and then he has the Senate and the House, boy, Sean, that could be, I mean, the dynamics here are fascinating,
right.
I think, either
way. And
you'll
get the shellacking at midterms.
But the bigger
one—not if we save the damn country, which is what we're trying to do right now.
What I think's hard on all of it, though, is nobody talks policy in this election ever. So I mean, there are, and I do think for better or worse, Trump has thrown out more policy positions you can debate and talk about. And there's items besides his personality to talk about. I would be very concerned if he's an independent, because I truly have no idea what Kamala is for or not. And the things that she was for, I'm very against. She's back, but I don't trust it. And I think they'd be real bad for the economy. And I really think there's a lot of independents that are going to demand that out of their senators and out of their House. Fix some problems. And I don't know if it'll work or not in that, but I would be, I at least like the fact that he's talking a lot of policy and he's proposing stuff. And I think it's going to hurt you that you have almost no policy at all.
I think the reality is no matter which one gets elected, I don't think there's going to be just some sudden unification. That's reality.
Yeah, you won't ever see any Democrats go like RFK coming over, Tulsi Gabbard coming over to him. And
you can have them both. When you get some like normal people to come over, then we can talk.
Sure, if they endorse
but
the other
yeah,
one,
those are not those. That's not who I would point to say, oh wow, Democrats are flocking to Trump. I actually think there were Republicans that
Liz
could
Cheney.
Have gotten.
Congratulations.
Well, yeah. I mean, by the way, Liz Cheney.
Adam Kinzinger.
Liz
right. I mean, are these the people? But every single person that
it's
worked
a weird
for
world,
him.
Though, isn't
don't
it?
You think that's interesting? That every single person, including his vice president who worked for this man, thinks that he's unfit for president. I think that's a pretty. I think people.
I don't think that's the case at all. By the way, and I well, but,
you do.
But when
would
it comes
you
to
lose
Liz
like
Cheney, 90% Liz Cheney,
of Kamala's staff while she was vice president.
Mm-hmm.
So well, does that say the same
Look,
thing?
Look, they both have flaws. Okay,
they both have
major
flaws. That's what I mean.
That.
Nothing's going to change.
It's going to come down
to
policy, and it'll be interesting. But I think it'll be interesting. I think Pennsylvania, though, I still am shocked that she didn't go with Shapiro over there, and I think that's going to have repercussions. And Fetterman is telling everybody that Trump's going to win.
Yeah, I think you underestimate him. They didn't think he would get elected, and he's become quite the star.
Right,
and
but
he's
he
the one moderating
everybody.
Her.
He's telling people that Trump's going to win that state. And you're saying that somehow that helps.
Well, that could be reverse psychology.
Absolutely.
Selena Zito had a great column. You know, she is a Pennsylvania-based reporter and journalist and wrote this book called The Great Revolt and has been a great guest on my show for many years. She was also on stage, essentially, when this happened with the assassination attempt. She was like 3 feet away. But she went back. She did a column about this this moment last week in the aftermath of the Abbey Gate anniversary where, you know, Harris has claimed that she was the last person in the room when Biden makes this decision that leads to the death of 13 American soldiers. And she had said at the time she was comfortable with that. And then, you know, they kind of go back and forth last week. And at one point, J.D. Vance says, if Kamala Harris is so asleep at the wheel that she won't even do an investigation into what happened and she wants to yell at Donald Trump because he showed up. And this had to do with the Arlington Cemetery dispute. He says she can go to hell. And that made some news last week. But what Selena's take was that that was a little misinterpreted from this standpoint. He was in Erie, Pennsylvania, and he was doing a speech at a trucking company. And he was doing, you know, this topic about the dignity of work and the importance of community. And she said that and this is something that I like Selena because she picks up on these undercurrents. And she certainly did in 2016. She said it was a speech that connected so well with those in attendance. Again, this is in Pennsylvania, that one woman wondered out loud where the heck his teleprompter was. Vance said, ma'am, I don't need a teleprompter. I've actually got thoughts in my head, unlike Kamala Harris. But her point on this is that you had a lot of people, and there are people in Pennsylvania that are very uncomfortable with the radical positions that Kamala Harris and certainly Tim Walz has taken, and they're not going to go for that. So it may all come down to Pennsylvania in the end. It really might.
I mean, but people said the same thing about Barack Obama, and now Barack Obama couldn't get out of a Democratic primary. I mean, he was not radical. They said Joe Biden was going to be a radical communist, and he was not. Look, she needs to move to the middle. That's the only way. That's the only way you get elected. Trump is moving to the middle. They're both moving to the middle. It's called a general election. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's what's going to happen. And you know, I mean, I think it's a toss up. And, you know, other than like this Arlington thing, no one cares about that. No one cares.
I think
there's a lot of discussion.
I think Jared Smith's told you what he thought about not getting any type of call or any type of response from her. And she take the time to do that. I mean, there's a lot of those families. I watched about 8 of those videos. They posted themselves on their
response. They care deeply about
you
this.
You sit there and stare at it. So watch Jared's dad talk about that and tell me nobody cares about Arlington. Because I bet that connected with a lot of
people. Well, but you also think that everything that comes out of Trump's mouth, that nobody cares about that. And they
no,
do.
I say they do. I'm just saying there's a lot of things that care about. Arlington is one that there'll be a segment of people I think that resonates with.
Absolutely.
Those people were never voting for her.
But I'm saying the veteran. Well, okay.
But if you're saying
Gold Star families and veterans were never going to vote for her, that says a lot about the candidate.
It does.
Well, I mean, I think, yeah.
All Gold Star families and all of them are never going to vote for her.
I mean, I think the ones that are complaining are not going to vote for her, or they wouldn't be complaining. Well, there's a lot of veterans that support her.
Sean's point, and I agree, that you know, little issues like that, and that's a big issue. I don't want to say minimize that, but it is affecting tens of thousands of people, and you're going to have a segment of the voters, and whether it's people Jane, to your point, there's going to be people that just cannot vote for Trump, right? They won't
Absolutely.
Do it. Maybe they won't for Harris, but they will not be able to bring themselves to do that. So everyone in this race, when you have 40,000 votes that separated, you know, this election from 4 years ago, when we have 330 million people, that's pretty incredible. And that's why
and I think
this
we're still
is
there.
So tight. I think we are still there. Hang on. We got one more segment. It's a Reardon Roundtable for a Friday afternoon. One more segment to go. We have Jane hanging out in the next hour. Sue's News will be here. Also, we're going to do a little fun stuff with Alex Rosenberger from Master Cars. I think there's a cool car show this weekend that we will promote. Paul Hall will have entertainment news, make some movie and TV recommendations, and Mr. Cusimano will be here as well. And we'll talk some Cardinals and NFL football. What a game last night. Who watched the Chiefs game last night? Sean, you did, right?
I watched a lot of it.
Jane, did you watch?
Yep.
That was amazingly exciting. It Xavier was, Worthy scoring for my fantasy team. Sue keeps asking me how my fantasy team did. She's all over it this afternoon, so I wanted to tell her. But
yeah,
that was a fun
game.
She
looks like it.
Edge of her seat.
Well, I'll get back
I just like exciting games.
I'll get back to sports here in a second. That was a thriller. It really
it was.
It was very exciting.
What was it, 1 inch, his shoe?
It's
1 inch?
It's the best televised sport there is.
I don't know if it was even an inch, but man, he was out of bounds. And
oh, no,
for
you
those
can
people
tell.
Didn't
I mean, his
see
foot
it.
Was on the line, but you're like, what did somebody say? If only he wore a size shoe, shoe.
I'm going to return to sports here in a second, but let me go back to crime in St. Louis. And this is, I don't know if this is
What are you talking about? Crime
doesn't exist,
Mark.
Well, this is more of just a tragedy, and I don't know what you do in a situation like this when you have a four-year-old that was shot by another kid in their house when there were no adults that were supervising the other night. So,
it's mind-boggling.
That's a culture issue. So what do you do there? Will there be charges with this particular case?
There should be. But what I find really offensive is where is the board of aldermen? No one came out and said, this is terrible. The silence is deafening.
Jane, these cops were so worried about this kid, they didn't even wait for the ambulance.
They took this little kid
in the back seat
of the
car.
And did anyone say thank you?
No.
Of course not.
It's unbelievable.
It's offensive. It's offensive. They don't have anything to say about this. This is a complete, unraveling of society when this happens. That you're leaving your 4 and your 5 year old. Was it a 4 or 5 year old alone?
There's 2 4 year olds. One was 9 and one was 10, all alone.
And thank God one of them had the sense to call 911. And stay on the line. But it's one thing that you leave your kids home alone, but you have a gun that's like easily accessible by a 4 year old.
But we also have people on this board of aldermen, and we have a mayor, and we have a congresswoman currently who think they think that the issue with St. Louis violence is cops that are killing young black men.
Yes.
Let's give some accurate stats. In this city, more than 50 children ages 17 or younger have been injured or killed by gunfire this year alone. 15 have died. Mm-hmm. Most involved teens. Some were accidental. These are black kids shooting black kids, gangbangers in many situations. Mm-hmm. But what we hear from this administration, and I've given up on this police chief, Jane. He's an embarrassment. Doesn't say anything. Just licks Tashara's boots. It's unbelievable.
And then they peddled the BS crime stats. You're excited that you're like 3 homicides less than last year. How many people have left? Here's the thing. When you adjust these crime stats for actual population, it's even uglier. People aren't calling the police anymore because there's not enough police and they know it. There's less people, that can be victims of crime. These are things that aren't even taken into account. There's not a single human being that's able to recreate the data that they peddle. Like, send it and see if a statistician can actually say, recreate the so-called, unbelievable gains in crime that they're getting. And what really frustrates me is we've been through this cycle 2 or 3 times. They've been busted on juking the stats, and not a single reporter says, produce the data. And then we're going to go in there and is it or is it not true that if there are 50 car break-ins at one time, it goes into the stats as one?
Right, which is what happens.
All right. So I was in Kansas City last weekend. And unfortunately, I was at the Irish Festival, and one of the chefs was murdered behind his restaurant at 5 o'clock.
Good Lord, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah. Ugh. And then when we exited the highway to get off at 22nd Street, there had been someone shot up with bullets on the ingress. And so Kansas City, they were losing it over these two murders. And those of us that were from St. Louis were like, oh my gosh, this is how incensed we are that we didn't think, oh, you just had two murders in the city of St. Louis.
No, we're totally desensitized.
We're desensitized.
Absolutely.
And that's not good. That's not good.
Correct.
Because that means that we aren't making those phone calls, that we're not seeing, we do have a problem, let's face it.
And by the way, the 911 is not fixed. By the way, we're still losing officers. We're more than 400 short. They have zero intention of refilling those. We have arrestees now. The jail's closed, by the way. The jail's closed right now, in case anybody wants to know. So arrestees, they either have to take them to a precinct and keep them there.
Why is the jail closed?
Overcrowding.
Right now? Oh, okay.
But crime's down. I know these statistics don't seem to make sense. But, I mean, I am so sick of it. And I am very upset that reporters do not ask the hard question and say, we need you to defend this data. We know what you have done before.
Part of the problem is we don't have any real reporters. You know, the people that were doing reporting, like Christine Byers, who leaves the Post, and then she goes to Channel 5, and then she takes a job that probably paid more money. She was actually a real journalist. There's a couple of people here that try to do real work. Yeah. They don't have resources, but there's not enough people that actually care about doing the stories.
Do you know they hired a social worker fundraiser to administer the East-West Gateway, which is supposed to be the regional crime plan.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't hire a police officer. They didn't hire, it's like Stop Murders Now. She made up some goofy name.
Oh, no.
And so they have a social worker, fundraiser, who's running the crime plan for the region.
Oh, my.
So,
great.
I mean, isn't that great?
That's great.
Yeah, so that's good. So that shows you how seriously they're taking the problem. So you will not hear anything from the alderman. You will not hear anything from the mayor. They will just keep saying everything is great. You don't know what you're talking about, even though people walk around in fear for their lives.
Right, but here's some good news. There won't be a lot of crime potential victims downtown because nobody's going to the Cardinals. So let's kind of shift into
there
that.
There you go.
We have a weekend series at home. The Marlins will be in town. The Cardinals, all of a sudden, actually, the last couple weeks are not playing as poorly as they were, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it's hilarious to me that there's still discussion on some of the broadcasts about potentially making the playoffs. I think we need to move on, and we have to accept the fact that there's big changes potentially coming. I don't know what those are, but clearly the fans
are
speaking.
Do you really think they're going to?
I think they're
going
to have to make big changes.
I think
because otherwise the stadium is going to be empty again next year and then the following year. So yes, something. Now I don't know that that means Marmol's fired. I have no idea what it means. I don't know if it means Mo steps back. I don't know what it means, but I think the DeWitts are smart enough to know that this is not sustainable right now, and there's been some mistakes. Look, they sent a news release out today, and I'd have to ask. We got Matt Pauly coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, but they announced today that Gary LaRocque was going to retire. He is the longtime player development executive of 49 years. He joined the Cardinals in 2008. It may be an age thing that he's retiring, but this is the guy that's kind of responsible for, you know, shepherding these young, talented players into their future, and that's failing right now. So I'm not saying that this guy's responsible. I don't know if maybe this was, you know, pushed a little bit and nudged because they're going to make some changes, but there's dynamics that are going to change. They have to.
Right. No, I think the fans are being very clear. I mean, in my lifetime, and, you know, I mean, I'm sadly old. You know, we've been through, the Cardinals have been through some, you know, the 70s, the 90s. I mean, there were some very bad periods.
There were.
And the fans did not abandon in the way. Now, they weren't breaking any records during those times, but it wasn't like this. And, you know, and people are very, you know, they love our team. And so I am a little nervous that the fans are not going to put up with it. And
it's an interesting mix downtown because there's nothing else to really do or go or rent. So it's like even you're not even getting that casual person that's going to be down there because you're getting more and more people that don't
other than soccer.
Well, and this is going to hurt Ballpark Village. Let's face
it's not good either way. The whole thing's a bad brew.
Right.
But that is the one thing people respond to is not making money.
All right, we're out of time. Hey, good to see you, Donna Behringer. Thanks for coming in. Sean Flower, awesome to see you. Have a great weekend.
Thank
Enjoy
you.
Football. Jane's going to hang out.
Yes.
We got much more to come here, including Paul Hall on entertainment and Frank Cusimano in the next hour. Hang in there. One more segment to go. We have Jane hanging out in the next hour. Sue's News will be here. Also, we're going to do a little fun stuff with Alex Rosenberger from Master Cars. I think there's a cool car show this weekend that we will promote. Paul Hall will have entertainment news, make some movie and TV recommendations, and Mr. Cusimano will be here as well. And we'll talk some Cardinals and NFL football. What a game last night. Who watched the Chiefs game last night? Sean, you did, right?
I watched a lot of it.
Jane, did you watch?
Yep.
That was amazingly exciting. Xavier Worthy scoring for my fantasy team. Sue keeps asking me how my fantasy team did. She's all over it this afternoon, so I wanted to tell her. But that was a fun game.
She looks like it.
Edge of her seat.
Well, I'll get back
I just like exciting games.
I'll get back to sports here in a second. That was a thriller. It really was. It was very exciting.
What was it, one inch?
It's the best televised sport there is.
I don't know if it was even an inch, but man, he was out of bounds.
And oh, no, for those people who didn't see it, yeah. His foot was on the line, but you're like, yeah, what did somebody say? If only he wore a size, size 7 shoe, he would have been fine.
Return to sports here in a second, but let me go back to crime and crime in St. Louis. And this is, I don't know if this is
crime. What are you talking about? Crime doesn't
exist,
Mark.
Well, this is more of just a tragedy, and I don't know what you do in a situation like this when you have a four-year-old that was shot by another kid in their house when there were no adults that were supervising the other night. So,
it's mind-boggling.
That's a culture issue. So what do you do there? Will there be charges with this particular case?
There should be. But what I find really offensive is where is the board of aldermen? No one came out and said, this is terrible. The silence is deafening.
Jane, these cops were so worried about this kid, they didn't even wait for the ambulance.
They took this little
kid in the back seat of the car.
And did anyone say thank you?
No.
Of course not.
It's unbelievable.
It's offensive. It's offensive. They don't have anything to say about this. This is a complete unraveling of society when this happens. That you're leaving your 4 and your 5-year-old. Was it a 4 or 5-year-old alone?
There's 2 4-year-olds. One was 9 and one was 10, all alone.
And thank God one of them had the sense to call 911. I mean, and stay on the line. It's one thing that you leave your kids home alone, but you have a gun that's like easily accessible by a 4-year-old.
But we also have people on this board of aldermen, and we have a mayor, and we have a congresswoman currently who think they think that the issue with St. Louis violence is cops that are killing young black men.
Yes.
Let's give some accurate stats. In this city, more than 50 children ages 17 or younger have been injured or killed by gunfire this year alone. 15 mm-hmm. have died. Mm-hmm. Most involved teens. Some were accidental. These are black kids shooting black kids, gangbangers in many situations. Mm-hmm. But what we hear from this administration, and I've given up on this police chief, Jane. I mean, he's an embarrassment. Doesn't say anything. Just licks Tashara's boots. It's unbelievable.
And then they peddle the BS crime stats. I mean, I'm like, okay, you're excited that you're like 3 homicides less than last year. How many people have left? I mean, here's the thing. When you adjust these crime stats for actual population, it's even uglier. I mean, people aren't calling the police anymore because there's not enough police and they know it. There's less people, that can be victims of crime. I mean, these are things that aren't even taken into account. There's not a single human being that's able to recreate the data that they peddle. Like, send it and see if a statistician can actually recreate the so-called, unbelievable gains in crime that they're getting. I mean, and what really frustrates me is we've been through this cycle 2 or 3 times. They've been busted on juking the stats, and not a single reporter says, okay, produce the data. Okay, and then we're going to go in there and is it or is it not true that if there are 50 car break-ins at one time, it goes into the stats as one?
Right, which is what happens.
All right, so I was in Kansas City last weekend, and unfortunately, I was at the Irish Festival, and one of the chefs was murdered behind his restaurant at 5 o'clock.
Good Lord, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, and then when we exited the highway to get off at 22nd Street, there had been someone shot up with bullets on the ingress. And so Kansas City, they were losing it over these two murders. And those of us that were from St. Louis were like, oh my gosh, this is how incensed we are that we didn't think, oh, you just had two murders? In the city of St. Louis.
No, we're totally desensitized.
We're desensitized.
Absolutely.
And that's not good. That's not good.
Correct.
Because that means that we aren't making those phone calls, that we're not seeing, we do have a problem. Let's face it.
And by the way, the 911 is not fixed. By the way, we're still losing officers. We're more than 400 short. They have zero intention of refilling those. We have arrestees now. The jail's closed, by the way. The jail's closed right now, in case anybody wants to know. So arrestees, they either have to take them to a precinct and keep them there.
Why is the jail closed?
Overcrowding.
Oh, okay.
But crime's down. I know these statistics don't seem to make sense. But, I mean, I am so sick of it. And I am very upset that reporters Do not ask the hard question and say, we need you to defend this data. Right. We know but what you have done
part
before.
Part of the problem is we don't have any real reporters. You know, the people that were doing reporting, like Christine Byers, who leaves the Post, and then she goes to Channel 5, and then she takes a job that probably paid more money. She was actually a real journalist. There's a couple of people here that try to do real work. Yeah. They don't have resources, but there's not enough people that actually care about doing the stories.
Do you know they hired a social worker fundraiser to administer the East-West Gateway, which is supposed to be the regional crime plan.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't hire a police officer. They didn't hire, it's like Stop Murders Now. She made up some goofy name.
Oh, no.
And so they have a social worker, fundraiser, who's running the crime plan for the region.
Oh, my.
So I
great.
Mean, isn't that great?
That's great.
Yeah. So that's good. So that shows you how seriously they're taking the problem. So you will not hear anything from the alderman. You will not hear anything from the mayor. They will just keep saying everything is great. You don't know what you're talking about, even though people walk around in fear for their lives.
Right. But here's some good news. There won't be a lot of crime potential victims downtown because nobody's going to the Cardinals. So let's kind of shift into
there
that.
You go.
We have a weekend series at home. The Marlins will be in town. The Cardinals, all of a sudden, actually, the last couple weeks are not playing as poorly as they were, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it's hilarious to me that there's still discussion on some of the broadcasts about potentially making the playoffs. I think we need to move on, and we have to accept the fact that there's big changes potentially coming. I don't know what those are, but clearly the
do
fans
really
are speaking.
Do you really think they're going to
I think they're going to have to make big changes.
I think they're getting
because otherwise
a
the stadium is going to be empty again next year and then the right. following year. So, right. yes, something. Now, I don't know that that means Marmol's fired. I have no idea what it means. I don't know right. if it means Mo steps back. I don't know what it means, but I think the DeWitts are smart enough to know that this is not sustainable right now, and there's been some mistakes. Look, they sent a news release out today, and I'd have to ask, we got Matt Pauly coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, but they announced today that Gary LaRocque was going to retire. He is the longtime player development executive of 49 years. He joined the Cardinals in 2008. It may be an age thing that he's retiring, but this is the guy that's kind of responsible for, you know, shepherding these young, talented players into their future, and that's failing right now. So I'm not saying that this guy's responsible. I don't know if maybe this was, you know, pushed a little bit and nudged because they're going to make some changes, but there's dynamics that are going to change. They have to.
Right. No, I think the fans are being very clear. I mean, in my lifetime, and, you know, I mean, I'm sadly old. You know, we've been through, the Cardinals have been through some, you know, the 70s, the 90s. I mean, there were some very bad periods.
There were.
And the fans did not abandon in the way. Now, they weren't breaking any records during those times, but it wasn't like this. And, you know, and people are very, you know, they love our team. And so I am a little nervous that the fans are not going to put up with it. And
it's an interesting mix downtown because there's nothing else to really do or go or rent. So it's like even you're not even getting that casual person that's going to be down there because you're getting more and more people that don't
other than soccer.
Well, and this is going to hurt yeah. Ballpark Village. Let's face
it's
it.
It's not yes. good either oh, way. The whole thing's a bad brew.
Right.
But that is the one thing people respond to is not making money.
All right, we're out of time. Hey, good to see you, Donna Behringer. Thanks for coming in. Sean Flower, awesome to see you. Have a great weekend.
Thank
Enjoy
you.
Football. Jane's going to hang out.
Yes.
We got much more to come here, including Paul Hall on entertainment and Frank Cusimano in the next hour. Hang in there.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.